Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the poisoned needle right after this. You know, back in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. Today, it's down to 38 days. Now, these global 2000 scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, disease, plague, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. That's under the Club of Rome plan. Well, in Revelation chapter 6, the God of Israel told us exactly the same thing, in essentially the same terms, using the terms false prophets, war, famine, and disease. In the early 1920s, nearly 50% of our people lived on the land as subsistence farmers, producing their own food and food for the rest of the world, and for you and me. But today, we Americans have chosen to live in our cities, and now only 3% of us live on the land. 97% of us then are no longer self-sufficient in our food production. Now, we Americans in our farm system produce grain for export, all right. And then we import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, berries from Guatemala, and our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who are in full support of this global 2000 world population control program. And these globalists, with their genocide agenda, have a cause that they're willing to die for, and I say let them die for their cause and let you and I live for ours. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It doesn't cost anything. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call right now and order one. The number's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. All right, we're talking about vaccinations from a book that we're reviewing here called The Poison Needle. It's probably the best book that I've ever picked up on the subject of vaccination. There's a lot of them out there. Eustace Mullins wrote a book called Something like The Poison Needle. I kind of forgot. Now, I did a report on the Eustace Mullins vaccination story. We've done these vaccination stories in the past. I thought it was apropos to pick it up once again, remind you that what's going on in the world today, most of the world is vaccinated, and it's vaccinated for a reason. It's a part of the protocols. Vaccination reduces, it lowers your natural immune system's resistance to disease. It's not an accident, it's done on purpose. These are not foolish people who are making dumb, ignorant mistakes. These are very ingenious people. In fact, I'm going to go so far as to say it borders on genius. Genius. When you can get people to take vaccinations, especially for their little children, this is the thing that really is surprising to me. For instance, here in America, we have a vaccination regimen of 35 shots by age 5. Now, most of those vaccinations contain thimerosal. Thimerosal is a preservative that's put into vaccine. This is what they tell us. Now, I don't know if this is the skinny or not, but this is what the This is what the cover story is. They put it in there as a preservative, and it contains mercury. Now, mercury is a deadly toxic. I mean, this stuff is so bad that many people are recommending that you have your mercury fillings taken out of your head. Here in this country, the Environmental Protection Agency monitors and recommends and tells you where the mercury safe levels are. And they tell you that that if you were to eat fish, if you're a pregnant woman, and you eat fish more than once a week, you're endangering your fetus. Now think about this for a minute. Ladies, come on. Pay attention here. Wake up. If you eat fish more than once a week, you are endangering the fetus. Now, there is some mercury in fish, not much, and some fish in various locations have more of it, but just fish, period. One shot, this is, you get this, one vaccination with thimerosal in it contains more mercury than all of the mercury that's contained in one tuna fish. You got that? Now, you're told not to eat tuna more than once a week, ladies. And you take your kid down and you have him shot up with 35 shots. And these 35 shots, every one of them contains more mercury than you'd find in a whole tuna fish. And then you're not going to eat a whole tuna fish. I mean, hell, those fish sometimes weigh 200 or 300 pounds. Now, they've begun to take this thimerosal out. Now, let me tell you something here about this. It's a... The other day, I couldn't think of this name. It's autism. Autism is a syndrome. They don't know what causes it. But in 1940, about one child, they just discovered this about 1940, 41, 42, long in there. But in 1940, this autism affected one child in 100,000 here in the States. By 1960, it was one in 10,000. Then it got to be progressively worse. More and more children came down with autism until today in 2010, as I report the story, we're experiencing one in 68, just right at one out of three. Now, what has happened in the United States of America over the last 80 years that would cause this? You know, just stop and think. And so they've got experts working on this, you know, and we get reports every once in a while, and they had a study, and they said absolutely, there's no doubt about it, the thimerosal in the vaccines does not cause autism. I just saw that report the other day. Some study came out, and they said absolutely not, can't happen in America. Now, at the very same time, I was reading another book here the other day, and a guy said, well, vaccines were not mandated in this country until 1934. And the federal government got in on the act, and they mandated two vaccines. One of them was the smallpox, and then the other, I don't know what the other one was now, but they started shooting kids up with two vaccines here in the United States on a regular basis, you know. And this went on and on and on. So today we're up to 35. So if you take a look back in the 1930s, before there were any vaccines at all, you know, 1900, 1910, 2030, we didn't have any autism. Or if we did, it was so rare nobody ever saw it and nobody knew what the hell it was. We know one in 100,000 by 1940. So today you got one out of 68. Now, what event has been going on in this country? The answer is vaccination. Vaccination started out in the 1930s at near nothing, and it has progressed until you got 35 shots for every child 5 years and under, or by the age of 5 years, and this autism has grown exponentially. Now, the experts went out and they tested and run studies and figured and thought, and they came up to the conclusion, well, it's not the thimerosal in the vaccines, although mercury poisoning is very similar to autism. I mean, if you were to get a dose of mercury, you know, you'd get real sick. and you'd get kind of dingy. Your brain gets scrambled. Sometimes you go into paralysis. It has different symptoms, but one of the symptoms is this thing called autism. So I got to thinking about that. Now, I'm just a plumber by trade. I'm just an old country boy, farmer. And I thought about this, and I said, in order to find out if vaccines are causing this, and I reported to you here yesterday or day before, I said, over in Japan, they tried a new wild experiment. They, instead of vaccinating their children from 2 months to 2 years, they stopped the vaccination at the early stages when a baby's immune system's at its poorest, weakest, and they delayed vaccine application until age two. And they noticed that the crib death rate in Japan dropped in half. I just wondered if they were to eliminate vaccines altogether, if the crib death rate would just drop to near nothing. I had an old buddy one time, and they took their baby in at about 3 months, I guess it was, to have their vaccine. And the baby got his vaccines, and he died about 5 or 6 days later of crib death. They had crib death. And they just woke up in the morning, went into the baby, and the baby's dead. That's got to be a terribly traumatic event. I had five children, and I can imagine what that would feel like if I walked in there and my little child was dead. I just kind of shudder to think of the thought of it. But and it could well be that we're the proximate cause of our own injury, and I just wanted to point that out to you. Now, if I was going to handle this study myself, and I'm not an expert now, but I'm not brain dead. I want to emphasize the fact that I'm not brain dead. But if I was going to check this thing out, I think I would look all over the world and try to find a population of people. Maybe down in the Amazon jungle, I could find a little band of Indians, you know, with poison darts and blow tubes, you know, and you know, find a little group down there, and then investigate and find out how often do those people who are never vaccinated, don't know what a poison needle is except out of the end of their blowguns, and check them out and see how many of them have autism or crib death. And then maybe I'd go to Nepal, or maybe to Mongolia, or up to the Eskimos in Siberia. You know, and anywhere I could find in the world where people had never been vaccinated and didn't know what it was, and then take a look and see how many of them have crib death or autism. Then I think I'd come back to the United States with those results, and then I would compare that with every child that has autism. And if any of you people out there are listening to me right now, here's something I'd like to know. If you have a child that has autism, would you send me an email? If the child has not had any vaccinations, this is the Gordon theory. I think that thimerosal in the vaccine causes autism. From everything that I can see and read and so on, that's my conclusion. Now, to disprove that would be very simple. All we do is we go out here and we find, of the 68% of children who have autism, in this country, about 12% of parents do not vaccinate their children. So, since autism doesn't strike everybody, you know, it's just one out of 68. I mean, you got to have 70 children over here to find one with autism. And we know that 88% of those children are vaccinated or close to it. And we know that 12% aren't vaccinated because 12% of us don't practice vaccination. I had five children, no vaccines, no autism, no crib death. But that doesn't prove our point. I mean, you know, there's kids out there that have vaccines, and they don't have autism, and they don't have crib death. So if you are sitting out there and you have a child with autism, but that child never had a shot, send me an email with you, and that'll disprove my theory right there. I'm thinking that you could get autism from something else other than vaccine, and that's what they're telling us, but we don't know what it is. And I'm sitting here saying, well, if we never had any autism before 1930, and we started vaccines in 1934, came up with one in 100,000 by 40, that tells me that vaccines should come onto the table and we should start suspecting them. And then let's take a look at it and go from there. Anyway, there's the Gordon theory. Now let's go back here to the poison needle. I'm on page 13. It's about a 200-page manual here, spiral-bound, written by Eleanor McBean, 1974. Health Research, Post Office Box 70, Mook. I can't pronounce this name here. It's Mokelumne. That's the name Hill. It's Mooklumne Hill, California, 95245. Best chance of you finding this is going to be in a health food store, a used bookstore, or you can try bravenewbookstore.com. Well, Sir Charles Chambers, he was the recorder of the City of London, and he said that, I find that of the 155 persons who were admitted to the smallpox hospital in the parish of St. James, 145 had been vaccinated. That's 145 out of 155. Came in with smallpox. 94% of them had been vaccinated. 10 of them had not been. In Mary Lavoir Hospital, 92% of the smallpox cases had been vaccinated. Now keep in mind here, boys and girls, that Great Britain mandated compulsory smallpox vaccine in 1853. That means that just the law, you have to get them vaccinated. And so, you know, most people will comply with the law. Here in the United States, 88% of you do. 12% of us are sitting here saying, no, we're not going to do that. So they had high percentages of vaccinations between 1860 and 1900. And in that period of time, they're keeping statistics. And they keep the records. Hell, those records are available right now today, you know, if you wanted to go look them up for yourself. It just happens that this lady has these tables and these statistics where she got these. She went around the world. She went to Egypt and got their numbers, United States and got their numbers, Great Britain got their numbers, and took a look at. There were some countries that wouldn't allow it. We took a look at their numbers. And then when you can you compare these numbers, by 1900, many medical doctors had looked at this and said, hey, this smallpox thing over here is a scam. This thing's causing more problems than it's worth. And they dropped it around the world. Hell, it was dropped for many years. Until the Rockefeller Trust got cooking. And then they reinvigorated it by 1920. Hell, by 1940, if you didn't have vaccines, there's something wrong with you. So propaganda and a concerted effort on the part of the establishment, the government. You get the government, you get the medical profession, you get the pharmaceutical industries, you get the trusts and foundations working on this thing. They can persuade a population to drink Kool-Aid and kill themselves. I'm convinced of it. As is evidenced by the fact that we have nearly universal vaccine here in the United States, which is totally against your self-interest. It's just that you believe that it's good for you because you don't know any different. Which is why I thought I'd tell you the other side of the story here. Now, Marson's report of Highgate Hospital for 1871 states that of the 950 cases of smallpox, 870, 90% of the whole number of patients, had been vaccinated. At Hempstead Hospital, up to May 13, 1884, out of 2,965 admissions for smallpox, 2,347 had been vaccinated. That's 79%. Now, after these vaccination epidemics, more and more people refused to comply with the unjust vaccination laws, and as a result of this and the improvements in sanitation and nutrition, Smallpox took a drop and continued to decline until it is rarely seen at the present time. In 1942, one case of smallpox at Syndon, Britain, resulted in the vaccination of a large number of people. Only three cases of smallpox occurred, and all of these recovered. But 12 vaccinated individuals died from inflammation of the brain. And this is very common. This is a very common effect of vaccination. In the same year, near Edinburgh, Scotland, 8 people died of smallpox, 6 of which had been vaccinated, while 10 died from the effects of the vaccination. Now, I would not go so far as to say that vaccination has never saved a person from smallpox. It is a matter of record that thousands of the victims of this superstitious rite have been saved from smallpox by the immunizing potency of death. But it is a fact that the official statistics of England and Wales show unmistakably that while vaccination has killed 10 times more people than smallpox, there has been a decrease in smallpox concomitant with the decrease in vaccination. And it might be appropriately asked, in the words of the Vaccination Inquirer, London, February 1947, how could an operation that was declining be responsible for the extermination of smallpox? Vaccine and Serum Evils, page 23, by Shelton. You know, that's a pretty good question. The real answer is the people in the 19th century started flocking to the cities from the land. They wanted to get in on the Industrial Revolution, and there was more money to be made in the city working in the factory than there was stand out on the farm as a subsistence farmer. So in this country, people flocked over here, and they flocked into the two big cities, Chicago and New York, and there was great overcrowding, there was squalor, there was filth, and there were high incidences of communicable diseases like cholera, typhoid, tuberculosis, and so on. Well, I forgot this guy's name now, but in 1890, the guy really got hot and heavy after it. He was the health commissioner in New York City, and he started cleaning things up, and they weren't using vaccination now. Well, they were using they didn't have it, see, but they were using quarantine. They were using sewage, clean water. You know, let's clean up our streets. Let's clean up and get cleaned here. So that by about 1910, the incidence of these communicable diseases had just dropped dramatically. Quarantine, sanitation, pretty well did the job. Now, at the same time that this is going on, we have vaccination going on. And so the proponents of the vaccine said, see, this is what's doing the job. Okay, but when you take a look at the statistics, and you look at the numbers, I just cited them to you. Here's 94% of the people are already vaccinated, and you find out that these people are getting the disease and they're dying from it. Now, when people today, I always chuckle when I hear this, people go out and they get their flu shot, and sure enough, they get the flu. And you say, well, that flu shot gave you the flu. Oh, no, the flu shot didn't give me the flu. I just got the flu. Now, they don't know. See, when I say the flu shot gave you the flu, I don't know that. You got your flu shot, and so my comment is, well, and that makes sense. You got the flu because you got the flu shot because they shot the flu into your veins. Now, most people are trying to avoid disease. You know, we try to stay away from garbage dumps. We wash our hands, you know, because we think, well, I might have germs on my hands, and then I might rub my nose or rub my eyes or put my finger in my mouth, and I might get that germ off my fingers and it'd get inside of me. And what germ are you trying to protect yourself from? Flu germs, flu virus. Then you walk into the doctor's office, and he shoots you right into your arm with this flu virus. Excuse me, boys and girls. Are you brain dead? On the one hand, you're washing your hands to make sure that the flu virus doesn't get in your mouth, and then you walk into the doctor's office and pay that SOB $25 to shoot it into your veins. And you say that's intelligent? I mean, you've been to college? You got a degree after your name? Huh? Boys and girls, if you've got a flu vaccine, the theory behind this thing, this is their sales pitch, they say, well, now you're protected. You see, we're stimulating your immune system. Your immune system now is going to recognize these viruses, and then it's going to kill them. See, we're just going to give you a little bit of the disease so that your immune system can kill it and recognize it. And then when this happens to you, you get this disease, you see, you're walking down the street with your mouth open in the wrong place at the wrong time. Your immune system will recognize these viruses and kill them. Your white corpuscles will take care of it for you. That's the theory. That's what they told me when I went to school. I don't know what the hell they're telling you today, but that was the story I got. So, tuck it away in your heart here, boys and girls. And remember, if you go down and get your vaccines now, and then you come down with the flu, you have to have an excuse, don't you? And then they say, can you imagine how sick I'd be if I hadn't gotten my vaccine? Now, about 36,000 people a year, they tell us, are dying from the flu. Now, I'm 70. I never had a flu shot in my life, and I'm not going to get one. And I am going to die. And I may die from complications of the flu. That's, you know, as my immune system, the older I get, the weaker my immune system is going to get. And for old people that are 65 or older, boys and girls, all of you old folks out there, do you understand that you're weaker today at age 65, 70, or 75 than you were at age 15, 20, or 25? That our bodies, our old bodies, do not have the same vitality that we had in the olden days. All right, now, can you follow that? All right. Sticking these flu viruses into your veins every year, year after year, your chances of getting Alzheimer's disease, get this, if you have had 10 flu shots over the last 10 years, one a year for 10 years, your chances of getting Alzheimer's increases by 50%. Did you know that? That's just a statistical fact. And that's put out by the CDC. I mean, if you can't believe the CDC, now, boys and girls, who can you believe? I don't make these numbers up, and I'm not smart enough to do that. Now, my common sense said to me that if my chances of getting Alzheimer's disease goes up 50% by getting 10 flu shots in 10 consecutive years, in fact, it's better than that. You don't have to have one a year for 10 years. You just have to have 5 shots in 10 years. 5 flu shots. You could get one every other year. Any combination of 5 shots in 10 years will increase your risk of Alzheimer's. Now, these flu shots have this thimerosal in them. Thimerosal is a nerve toxin. And Alzheimer's is a brain nerve. You see, you got a brain, and in order to get to move your finger down here on my hand, I'm going to move my first index finger. The signal has to come from my brain down my spinal cord and then out my arm, you know, up my arm, down my arm, down over my finger here to make that thing move. Mercury screws up these neural connectors up there in your brain so you can't get the signals out. That causes paralysis, and you get kind of dingy, and you get the palsy, one thing and another. It's one of the symptoms of mercury. Another symptom that you get from mercury over here is that over time, it screws up these neural connectors, and now you can't remember things. Now, my common sense would say to me, we ought to stay as far away. I mean, young people, you know, can stand this. They test young people. When they're testing these vaccines, they go to the colleges and they pay these students $100 to $300 to become a human guinea pig. And then when they get through with it, they say, well, you know, this guy here is 23 years old and we shot him up with this vaccine, or we shot him up or gave him this medical procedure and he didn't die from it. Then they turn around and they sell that vaccine or that product to two-month-old babies or to 75-year-old ladies. Well, with the young, their immune system isn't developed yet, and with the old, their immune system is old and worn out. Now, I see my immune system is old and worn out, and I'm not nearly as virile as I used to be. And that's why I need to wash my hands, and stay as far away from those viruses and bacteria as I can get. Because if my body takes in a little shot of them, then if my immune system's working at 35-40%, it may kill them off. If it gets down to working at 10 or 15%, it may not. Now, vaccine makes a lot of money, and the reason for selling these vaccines is the profitability in it. I mean, that's where the reality of it is. Follow the money. And it's immensely profitable. But I want to tell you one more little thing before I take our break here. There's a guy by the name of Dr. Robert Mendelsohn. He's a lot smarter than I am. He didn't vaccinate his kids either. Now, this Mendelsohn was a medical doctor. He died a few years ago, I don't know, 10 years ago or so. He's not an ordinary medical doctor. He's a pediatrician. This is a baby doctor. Okay. He's not an ordinary baby doctor. He's an instructor. I think he was at the University of Chicago Medical School. He was a doctor that teaches doctors. He's a doctor teacher. Okay. He wrote a book, and it's called How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Pediatrician. And he said, he got a chapter in there on vaccines and vaccination. He said he wouldn't give a kid a vaccine. And he said that only 10% of pediatricians here in America vaccinate their children. Now, they're vaccinating your kid and getting paid $25 to do it. Now, the vaccines, actually, the reason that they're able to get away with this is that the vaccines don't kill very many. See, the vaccines in America, we're given about 50 million shots a year. Well, it's more than 50 million because we got 50 million children in the country, but and they're all getting 35 shots. But there's 50 million kids in the country, and these 50 million kids are getting their vaccines every year, their booster shots, and by age 5, they're supposed to have 35 of them. And there's only killing 100 a year. So out of 50 million, when 100 of them die, what the hell's the big deal? And the death certificate never says your kid died from vaccine. It says your kid died from cerebral hemorrhage, or he died from a swelling of the brain, or something that's very scientific. The doctor, remember, that gave him the shot that killed him is the same doctor that's going to fill out the death certificate and is the same doctor that doesn't want to get sued for malpractice and is the same doctor who's going to cover his own ass. All right, so wake up here. Now, if you wanted to have an autopsy done on this child, you want to have an autopsy done, find out, what killed him. And when they come back, they'll say, his brain swelled up so much that it finally killed him. What caused his brain to swell up? I mean, I've lived for the last month, and my brain hasn't swollen up. We Americans are having a hard time thinking and putting two and two together, That's kind of my conclusion. Let me give you your mid-course reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page, and you can download it off our archives page. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Now, keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct, 417-273-4967. All right, going on. Unvaccinated diseases declined faster than vaccinated smallpox. Records in all countries show that the so-called contagious diseases declined quite rapidly with the introduction of sanitation and nutritional reforms, with the exception of smallpox and diphtheria, which were kept alive by vaccination in a large number of authenticated cases. Now, the following condensed records from the various countries give a cross-section of the available evidence that bears out this point. In a report from British India in 1929, while India was still under British rule with its compulsory vaccination laws, the League of Nations Health League referred to India as the greatest center of smallpox in the world today. The records show that in the large cities where vaccination enforcement was most rigid, the smallpox death rate has been generally far greater than for the country as a whole, where complete enforcement is not possible. The report of the League of Nations Health Division for October 1953 reluctantly admits vaccination is not all it ought to be when it says in part, quote, "In spite of the great efforts made by the health authorities in promoting vaccination, smallpox is not on the point of extinction." After the limited health improvement programs, we find that the plagues and scourges all declined noticeably except smallpox and respiratory diseases, such as tuberculosis, which is a common after effect of vaccination. The average death rate from fevers and other causes per 1,000 of population of diseases in India for 10 years, from 1898 to 1907, and for 16 years, 1921 to 1930. I'm not going to go down the whole chart here, but I'll just give you the highlights of it. Fevers such as malaria, plague, cholera, dysentery, diarrhea, smallpox, other causes, and respiratory diseases such as the TB. And Edward Jenner had promised that vaccination would wipe out smallpox, but instead, All other diseases, even the most persistent and deadly plagues, declined more rapidly without any serums than did smallpox with its repeated vaccinations. Now again, if you look at the period from 1898 to 1930 in India, all of the diseases, fevers, plagues, malaria, cholera, dysentery, diarrhea, smallpox, other causes, and respiratory diseases, all declined from 19.44 per 1,000 to 0.85. That's less than 1 per 1,000 over that period. Now, that's 32 years. They all declined except two. Malaria. Excuse me. What was the other disease here? It was smallpox and it was either malaria or typhoid. And I can't see it here on the page. And those are the two diseases that they were vaccinating for. All right, tuck that one away now in your brain. Around 1900, after the improvements in health due to sanitation and nutrition had time to be weighed against that of vaccination, most of the people of England began to refuse the vaccination, which resulted in a greater decline in smallpox. But in certain cities of India, the British government was still able to keep up the rigid enforcement. The following chart shows a high smallpox death rate in three of these Indian cities as compared to the decreased death rate in London after the cleanup health campaign. So they have the cities of Bombay, Calcutta, Madras, and London. And then when you take a look at London, they were having 10 per 1,000 die in this 32-year period. Well, let's see, it's 1888 to 1933. So it's 45-year period here. From 10 per 1,000, it drops to just a little over 1 per 1,000. But where they continued this vaccination campaign in India in the same period, it actually went up from 424 to 866. It went up from 600 to 1,201 in Calcutta. It went up from 100 to 521. So it goes up, get this, they vaccinated these people in India for 45 years for these two diseases. This is, I think it's typhoid and smallpox. The death rate when they began the program was 424 per 100,000, and it doubled from 424 to 866 in 45 years. It actually had a peak in here. It hit 1,000 in 1898 to 1907. It hit 1,000 per 100,000, 1%. Calcutta went from 600 to 1,200. It doubled. From Madras went from 100 to 500. It went up 500%. While in London, it went from 10 down to 1. All right. Now, those are statistics. Now, they just pick out certain countries here. And this author said, in every country that they checked, they had the same result. Notice this. Every country. Every single country. The higher the vaccination rate, the higher the disease. The higher the death rate in the vaccinated people. Now, their theory was that very simple. People who have a strong immune system, it don't make any difference what you do to them, they're not going to get sick. You can give them a vaccine, they're not going to react to it. You don't give them a vaccine, they don't get sick. Doesn't make any difference. The people who are weak, like old people, like me, their immune system is weak to start with. You give them a shot, they may or may not react to it. But like as not, the death rate is going to be the highest among the oldest and the youngest population. The young children now, from age birth to 5 years, their immune system is constantly getting stronger and stronger and stronger. Right at the very period that you're giving them all these vaccines, their immune system's at its weakest. Which is exactly the wrong time, as we showed you from Japan. I said, hey, let's postpone this until these children are 2 years old. Well, it dropped the crib death by 50%. Hey, listen, I bet you if you check their statistics over there, you'd find out every other disease is dropping too. Now, they're getting away with this because they only kill a certain number, about 100 a year here in the United States. And so the people here in America have never caught on to this vaccine scam. In fact, there's a reason for that. Listen to this. Let me give you a little story here. In the protocols, we have two protocols here that fit this bill perfectly. Now, listen to this. The 13th protocol says, to prevent them from really thinking about anything themselves, we shall deflect their attention to amusements, games, pastimes, excitements, and people's palaces. Such interests will distract their minds completely from questions on which we might be obliged to struggle with them. This reminds me of jaywalking. Have you ever watched Jay Leno in his jaywalking segment, and he goes out and he asks these young people, you know, on the street, hey, what do you think of this or that? Can you tell me? He asked one kid one time, he said, can you tell me in what country is the Panama Canal? He didn't know. He said, well, in what country is the Great Wall of China? And the kid says, China? And Leno said, yeah, that's right. Now, what country is the Panama Canal? Kid didn't know. One girl was, you know, these are funny little stories, you know, but the tragedy of this is that these people vote. These people are adults. They've got voting cards in their back pockets and credit cards. He asked this one girl, he says, you see that flag up there? And here's the United States flag flying. And he says, how many stars are in that flag? And the girl looks up at the flag. She looks at it for a minute. She says, I can't count them. The flag's moving too fast. Now, I could understand somebody you know from China or Japan or Great Britain or somebody, you know, if you ask them, how many stars are in the American flag? But for an American, see, for an American to not know that there's 50 stars in our flag, you know, is just it's an appalling level of ignorance. Now, I can tell you how many stars are in the Chinese flag. It's 5, one big one and 4 little ones that are in an arc. I don't necessarily follow Chinese politics, but, you know, I saw their flag one time flying, and I counted the stars in them, and I remembered there's 5. Don't you think that people that go to school here in the United States ought to know how many stars there are in our flag? Now, becoming less and less accustomed, they go on to say, to independent thinking, people will express themselves in unison with us because we alone offer new lines of thought, of course, through persons whom they do not consider in any way connected with us. So you're watching Brian Williams, Katie Couric, and Diane Sawyer. And they tell you a story. They tell you the answer. You don't need to think much. You don't need to go check up. You have confidence in them. Now listen to this. 12th protocol calls for, we shall handle the press in the following manner. We shall saddle it, keep tight rein upon it, and we shall do the same also with other printed matter. For of what use is it to rid ourselves of attacks in the press if we remain exposed to criticism through pamphlets and books? Not one announcement will reach the people save under our supervision. And we have attained this at the present time to the extent that all news is received through several agencies in which it is centralized from all parts of the world. Literature and journalism are two most important educational forces, and consequently our government will become the owner of most of the journals. If we permit 10 private journals, we shall organize 30 of our own, and so on. And this must not be suspected by the public, for which reason all of the journals published by us will be externally of the most contrary opinions and tendencies, thus evoking confidence in them and attracting our unsuspecting opponents, who thus will be caught in our trap and rendered harmless. So, going back to jaywalking over here, we have sent our children to the educational institutions, and we have dumbed them down to the point that they can no longer think, you know, to prevent them from really thinking about anything themselves. Vaccines and vaccination is a classic example. The news media, the three major news outlets here in the United States are ABC, CBS, and NBC. And we have confidence in our news reporters. And when we see these reports, and every night they tell us, go out and get your flu shot. Go out and get your flu shot. Wash your hands and go get your flu shot. And so this propaganda beat just goes on and on and on. And the people, they go to colleges and universities, and so they tell them, the solution to disease is vaccine. The solution to disease is vaccine. The solution to disease is vaccine. From the time this little kid, who's been shot up himself 35 times by age 5, gets into college, it isn't any big surprise that he believes in vaccines and vaccination as the solution to disease. It's the only thing he knows. And then when some lunatic comes along and says, why don't you re-examine that and think about it? He can't. He can't. Propaganda is one of the most valuable tools that's ever been used in war. That's why we drop leaflets on our enemies to demoralize them, make them give up. Propaganda is a tremendous force. So in this war, there's a number of plans. In other words, these people are trying to take over the world. And they're not just using vaccines. That's just one. See, vaccination is just one tactic in the war. They use wars like Afghanistan and Iraq. They use usury. They use economics. They use law, politics, deception, religion, disease, plague, famine. These are all used to destroy you. They're all being used simultaneously. And, all right, so the 12% of us that don't get vaccines, they're not going to get us with vaccination. We can be real smart. Then we go join the army and get killed in Iraq or Afghanistan. Or the two wars over there that we voted for bankrupt our nation and throw us into national captivity. I mean, you know, when you're fighting a war, guns and bullets are a part of it. But propaganda is another valuable part of it. Espionage, intelligence. There's all kinds of ways to win a war. And there's all kinds of ways to weaken your enemy so that the other tactics that you're using can overcome him and destroy him. Now, we've been engaged in a war with the forces of evil. We call them the Illuminati. We call them the Learned Elders of Zion. We call them the establishment, you know. The war's over. The war ended in 1928. They succeeded in all of their protocols that they had set out to accomplish in 1884 were all accomplished by 1928. The Second World War was for the purposes of solidifying their power and the creation of the United Nations. Now, they're in the process of the last phase of the plan, and that is to create the New World Order, this one world government. That's what we're in the process of doing. And they're already in control of the government of Great Britain. They're in control of the government of Russia. They're in control of the government of South Africa, Japan, and the United States. That doesn't mean that they're in control of everybody in the country, but they're in the process of solidifying that control and taking over. Now, they've got control of the news media. They've got control of your government. They're in control of your monetary system and your money. And little by little, they are squeezing your neck, and you're being able to breathe less and less. It won't be very long until you're dead, and that's the objective here. Okay, so tuck it away. This vaccination story this week is just one little part of the overall game plan that's been in operation now for 3,000 years. 3,000-year plan coming to conclusion. Now, God comes into the picture, and he's had a little bit to say about this, too. This is called the Great Tribulation. So if you want to know why this is coming upon us, you go to Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, and he'll tell you the answer to that. It's you and me, boys and girls, brought this on ourselves. And what's being done to us by our enemies is being allowed by our Creator because we broke the terms and conditions of the contract, and now we're being punished for it. So Hurricane Katrina, for instance, comes into play. And that's just a small part of your punishment. The objective here is to get you to wake up and start thinking. That's not very likely to happen, but, you know, there's a possibility of it. And so every once in a while, I like to come on the air and say, well, now listen, Can we think now for a minute independently of the propaganda machine that's out here? Every night that we're watching the propaganda machine. Let's listen to what these people are telling us, and then let's measure up and see, is this really the way it's going down on Main Street? Now, I mentioned this the other day. I'm going to digress here for a second. But, you know, we have this economic crisis. And our government officials said, well, the solution to this is to bail out all the banks. You see, we owe the banks this money, and we're not making our payments, and the banks are going to fail, so we have to keep our banking system afloat. So we Americans went out and we spent $29.1 trillion in cash, credits, guarantees. One of the guarantees was we boosted our savings insurance from $100,000 to $250,000. All this debt, all of these guarantees for the banking industry. And it's because the housing industry or the housing sector collapsed. Boys and girls, we only owed $15 trillion on every house mortgage in the country. For half of the nearly $30 trillion that we spent, we could have taken all of the $15 trillion in mortgages, guaranteed those, or had the government write the checks to the banks, and the banks would have been paid off and they'd all be solvent. And every American would be debt-free on his mortgage. For half the money, we could have bailed out the banks and paid off every mortgage in the country, which would have been the equivalent of a jubilee, which would have solved the debt crisis for half as much money, and every American would be an owner of his home. Instead of doing that, we took twice as much money and gave it to the banks and left the people in debt. Now, the people who are in debt are the underwriters of the $30 trillion worth of guarantees and money we gave to the banks, and the banks still hold the mortgage on your house. And we call ourselves educated. We've been to college. We've got diplomas and degrees. Now, I'm not a great economist, but the road that we followed here is going to lead us into economic destruction and poverty. That was a crazy move. And our president is out there telling us to look for green shoots, and everything's fine. You just pay attention here. Well, all right, boys and girls, you stick with that economic formula. And while you're at it, go down and get your kid another shot. Go down and get him vaccinated again. Now, we'll be back here tomorrow, and we'll be taking a look at unvaccinated diseases, the average annual smallpox death rate, smallpox death rates for Mexico, Egypt, and other countries around the world, and I'll show you in the next program over here that this story of get your kid vaccinated over here is not supported by the evidence of the last 150 years. Now, we have the absolute statistical analysis from 1853 to 1950, and it didn't work in that 100-year period. Then it's not very likely that it's going to work any better over the next 100-year period. And in fact, when we look at our sickness rate and we look at our disease rate, we find that it's an abysmal record. It's bad and getting worse. All right, I'm about out of time here, so let me give you a final reminder that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log, schedule, and archives. And all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.